This is Phil Ferrand, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It is episode 386. Before we know it, we're going to be to 400. And after that, we're going to be to 416. Then it'll be 8 years worth of podcasts. It's been a good week. Everything's been pottering along. Got some things done that needed to be done. Had some meetings. Had a few chats. All is well. All is moving forward. I'm on chapter 30 of the book. The next book. Windfall 5. The Reddening Sky. On chapter 30 of that book. This is the news and information chapter, so those usually go pretty quick. So I fully expect to get that done this weekend. And then we get started with the epilogue. I got tickled because I actually have two different things I could do for the epilogue. And I was thinking, oh, should I do this? Should I do that? Should I do this? Should I do that? It's going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And there were some things about each one that I liked about the idea, but I was thinking, back and forth, back and forth. And this morning, because I'm getting close to getting started, I was getting ready this morning and I just thought to myself, oh Jesus, what in the world am I going to do with that epilogue? And the little thought popped into my head, well, you could do them both. Paused a minute. I guess I could do them both. I started thinking my way through that because I got the thought, well, you could do them both. And then immediately behind that, I got another thought that because the one would set up an emotional resonance for the next one. Oh, that's a good idea. Thank you. So It's amazing how things like that work out. So we'll see. It ain't on the page yet, and there's a long, long road between having the idea and actually getting it on the page. But what it means is I'm going to have to write leaner in the epilogue than I normally do. Because there's going to be a lot of material to pack into it. But book 3 had a lot of material packed into that epilogue, and that worked out okay. So, I'm just going to have to write lean, that's all. I mean, it's just going to have to get right to the point, as opposed to taking these dalliances out and around the farm and back again. Then I got to get that to write. If I can get that written this next week, over the course of the next week, I'm in good shape because that means I will have the book roughed in. And I will still have almost 2 weeks in August. Is that right? Because this is the 18th. So if I could, well, no, I 1 week. I have almost one full week in August left. To start the read-through that I was going to start the first full week of September, which is good because my wedding anniversary is actually coming up the end of September, so, you know, that's going to take us some time away from working, but that's fine. It's good. All is well with this, you know, going forward with the young lady who's coming to live with us. I think everything's fine there. We had a little excitement over the car. We thought we had it all worked out. We were beta testing to see what it would be like to not have mom and dad's car there. And after a couple of days of that, my mom had had enough of it, even though she can't remember. Normally, she she was able to kind of pull this out, and her reactions kept getting worse and worse to not having the car there. It was very interesting. So the car's back over there. I may just borrow the car for a little while. We'll figure out a way to get a third car. And Liz and Alan are looking for another car at this point, so we'll get this all figured out. It's a little bit of a setback, but that's okay. Things will be okay, you know. It's just comes down to fear for my mom. Well, how are we going to get our groceries? And I'd explain, well, Mom, I've been actually picking you up and taking you grocery shopping for like the last 3 years. No, you haven't. Yes, I have, Mom. Why would I lie to you about this? You know, but it's just, whoa, we had an interesting conversation because I've always been able to reach her, but there was just no reaching her. She was determined. She wanted that car back in the garage, or she was going to buy another car. Like, Mom, you know. So, and I tried putting the signs up and I tried doing all that, but it was just not happening, which is really interesting since she basically can't remember 2 minutes from what happened before. But that fear was able to bridge across her loss of memory. That's very, very interesting. So, yeah, it was very interesting. And my dad, at one point, called me and he said, well, I've talked to her and she said she'll sign it. So just bring over the title right now and she'll sign it and then we're done. And I just said, no, Pop, I'm not doing that. No. I said, because this is going to come back around. And it's going to keep coming back around. Because it doesn't matter what conversations we have about this. It's going to come around, and it's fear, and it's just going to keep eating at her. And I said, I'm not going to put you in a situation where you have these big, heated conversations 3-4 times a week for the rest of your life. That's crazy. We're not doing that. Well, if you could just... I said, no, Pop, I'm not doing it, period. Not doing it. So then he called me the next day, and he said, yeah, you better bring the car over, because... And I heard her in the back part. I want that car in the garage now. Okay. So. And there's no explaining. You know, I tried explaining. Well, neither of you drive anymore. It's just sitting there. We'll take you anywhere you need to go. No, that's her car and she wants it there. So there you go. There you go. Learned something very, very interesting. But we had specifically scheduled to try this a couple of weeks ahead to beta test it to see what would happen. So, you know, we beta tested it. We see what happened. Time to go to plan B, which is just fine. It'll all work out. See if there's anything else. My granddaughter started first grade this week, so just doesn't seem possible she's that old, but that seems to be going fine. My grandson is getting ready to start preschool, which will be a very interesting experience for him. it's just going to be very interesting to see how that all works out. My granddaughter, she's a little social butterfly. I mean, she's a girl. They have more of a tendency to be social butterflies than guys do. She's a girl, so she's, you know, she's that whole social thing. She's got that. My grandson, he's a boy. He's all boy. So it's going to be very interesting to see how that all works out. I'm sure there may be a few conversations here and there before it's all said and done. But it's going to be fine. It's fun. He's gotten to the point now where he smiles real cute in pictures. For a while there, it wasn't so good, but he's smiling real cute in pictures now. So it's fun to watch him grow and fun to watch all the things developing and all the language skills developing. So life is good. Life is good. And if I can get this book landed, that will be 5 with just 19 to go. And I say just 19 because I'm in the teens. Once I get this book landed, I will be in the teens left. Unbelievable. And once 6 goes down, I'll only be 2 away from finishing the octet. Ow! So it's like a year and a half. You know, the first octet on this series is going to be done. Just... this is so much fun! Ah, I love writing. Okay. So, this week... obviously, if you've watched any news at all in the last several months, you've noticed that there's a whole lot of argumentative stuff and a whole lot of wrangling and roaring and beating of chests and everything else going on in the world. And I came across this article, and the name of the article, and I apologize, I don't have who wrote it. The name of the article was Trump, Brexit, and IS and ISIS are the symptoms, and technology is the problem. And I thought, oh, well, let's just see, is this satirical? Wait, let's just see what this guy has to say. And it was pretty interesting. When I first... read this, I hearkened back to something that I used to say years ago about technology, that there was a different way you could look at technology. And I'm sure, given that these podcasts have been going on now for 7.5 years, I'm sure somewhere back in the archives I've made the statement that I'll get to in a little bit about technology and what technology actually could be. I think there's very much, absolutely, this wonder of discovery in technology, that it is the glory of God to hide a thing and the glory of kings to seek it out. I think there's very much that. But I also think that technology speaks to our comfort and to our convenience and to our control. And anything that affords us the illusion of comfort and convenience and control can work against us. And so we'll get back to that in a minute, but let's go through what this guy says. So this guy started off his article by saying, "The world seems to be going mad with division. Religious fundamentalism versus the modern world, nationalism versus openness, old versus young, us versus them. In each case, a group that used to have the upper hand is now angrily despondent at its place in society and future prospects." He said, you know, this has been a steaming kettle for years, but is now peaking with the rise of political phenomena that threaten to upend the progress of our civilization. If we dig a layer deeper to try to understand the real cause, it becomes clear that technological advancement is the real culprit. Wow. Okay. The agricultural revolutions swept through different regions at different times and took hundreds of years to fully transform society. The first and second industrial revolutions truly changed the standards of living in a period spanning more than 150 years. The digital revolution has been enriching our lives for the last 3 generations, while at the same time boiling the metaphorical frogs of our political system. And we've talked before about there are 2 views of the future. You know, there's the dystopian view, and there's the utopian view. And the utopian view seems to think that somehow everything is going to become a giant Google where we're given all this money just to sit around and click on things so that we can buy things so that we can give it back to the businesses so that they can then give it to the government to give it back to us so that we can buy things, which is an interesting idea on paper. I'm not that optimistic, but hey. So anyways, he gets into some of that then in this article. According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, productivity for the manufacturing sector almost tripled from 1990 to 2070 when compared with 1973 to 1999, with the Great Recession slowing things back down. So, you know, most people, he said, say that the decline of U.S. manufacturing is because of trade agreements, but in fact, technology has brought about such huge productivity gains.
Huge!
That word will never be used again in any kind of context without thinking of Donald Trump. It's gonna be huge! Yeah. Most people think that, well, you know, it's because of trade agreements that our manufacturing is down. But in fact, we've become extremely productive. Now, it is true that jobs have been shipping overseas, and they first of all ended up in China, and then they're going to cascade down to the next lowest denominator, and the next lowest denominator, and the next lowest denominator. Because anytime you have a business that is a penny a pound business, where you're trying to squeeze one additional penny out of every pound of stuff that you manufacture, anytime you have that type of business, you're going to go where the cheapest labor is. I think the current environment is Bangladesh, because they basically don't have any regulations at all. But it's going to keep cascading, and this guy says, and I think this guy is actually a venture capitalist, which makes this interesting. He says, in the future, in the near future, the next cheapest stop won't be another less developed region. It's going to be robotics and AI. So, you know, you're going to have this, and we've talked about this before, more and more robots, more and more AI taking people's jobs, where the job is something that robots and AI can do. And so he sees that there's four transformational technologies, categories of technologies, that are going to change our near future beyond recognition. And this was pretty interesting. So one is 3D printing. You know, he expects that within just a few years, you're going to be able to order tennis shoes online and print them. He said a few years after that, you'll be able to print complete electromechanical devices, including the batteries. So what does that do to manufacturing and logistics? Well, a lot of that you don't need anymore. You don't need people driving trucks around and blah, 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 blah. The other thing is the Internet of Everything. He said that's going to be a big, huge factor. He said it will be a generational transition in all devices and drive substantial efficiencies in the way many, many problems get solved. As one example, it will largely reduce the need for human intervention in the service sector. Because if each product is communicating and doing things like saying, hey, you know, I need a service call, or hey, I'm almost out of whatever, you know, things get ordered, blah, 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 it gets confirmed, gets shipped to your house, blah, 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 there's not really a need to call an order from anybody, it just happens. Immersive is another big one that he says is going to revolutionize this idea of augmented reality and virtual reality, that we're carrying all this stuff forward with us all the time. He said not only does this mean our computing devices will be more naturally integrated into our lives than carrying pocket-sized glass slabs, but they will quickly become our brain prosthetics. At first figuratively, but soon enough quite literally, this will certainly change the way we consume information, including how and what we learn. I've said in the past that I've always been pondering what will be the technology that I don't get that my grandkids will? You know, what will be the thing that is so foreign to me that I'm not going to be able to pick it up even though I'm a technologist? And I really haven't come up with an answer for that, but one of the interesting things is this business of brain implants. You know, if I have a brain that has been raised on not having implants, and then we have great-grandchildren, or even my grandchildren, although I don't think it'll happen that soon, or my great-grandchildren, who get their implants when they're 5 years old, it's just like kids who are playing video games all their life. You know, me, as someone trying to operate a sniper rifle, yeah, it's just not going to happen. It's, I'm getting my mail. I mean, I know what everybody says and what, you know, how they make things, you know, say, well, you do this and then you, you know, one moment. Oh, hey, she got her good. Got her stickers for her car. They say, well, yeah, make sure, you know, and then don't hear and don't spend a lot of time this. And they, all this coaching about how you fire this sniper rifle inside these virtual games. Yeah, forget it, okay? It's not going to happen. Because all those skills that these kids have grown up with. And I think maybe the brain implants are going to be the thing for me. First of all, I'm not sure I would ever be completely comfortable getting them. But then even after I got them, I don't know that I could utilize them as well as someone who had them from birth. So, little sidebar. Anyways, immersiveness. Brain implants. And the last big one is artificial intelligence, of course. That artificial intelligence is just going to keep growing and keep growing and keep growing. He says at the end of that section, learning from nature while bypassing the physical limitations of the size and speed of the human brain is bound to trigger an intelligence explosion that will transform every aspect of the world. The ultimate goal of AI is to create a machine that can emulate and surpass human cognitive and physical abilities. Once these combined technologies fuse and reach parity with human intelligence, aka singularity, there will be a takeoff period that may be slow decades, medium months, or fast until superintelligence is reached. And we've talked about that in the past too. These are huge things on the horizon. The next 20 years is just going to be unbelievable. It's just going to be incredible. So with these things then, he says, so where do we go from here? He said, many philosophize that AI will be the last human invention, though it is impossible to project what that will truly mean for our society. Gartner is predicting that 1/3 of current jobs will be taken over by software, robots, and smart machines as soon as 2025. 1/3 of jobs. Says there are more than 3 million Americans today who work in delivery and other driving-related jobs. With the recent advances in autonomous vehicles, it would be naive to think that they will still be employed in 10 years. There are also more than 4 million retail salespeople, 3 million cashiers, 1 million security guards. These and many other professions will all but disappear. Considering the entire U.S. labor workforce is fewer than 160 million people, these changes in labor demand will make the unemployment woes of 2009 feel insignificant in comparison. Now consider the effects worldwide. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. He said society is busy playing tug of war with the past, yet the future is going to change our reality as we know it. And he wraps this up by saying the third industrial revolution is already happening. We now have a choice. Do we take advantage of the technology and create an incredibly better world for the entire human race? Or do we let the gains continue to consolidate and grow societal conflict to the breaking point? We've already gotten a preview of how society is responding to the growing inequities with the rise of Trump, Brexit, and ISIS. Then he goes on to say, if we choose to take the collective red pill, society must realign its mission statement to the reality of what the future will bring. Okay, yeah. Besides protecting our environment and accelerating the shift to clean fuels, we need to prioritize access to education, make healthcare a human right, and yes, even seriously considered guaranteed basic income. In other words, everybody gets paid to just sit around. No matter your political learning, yearning, leanings, you can't build a business without having customers to sell to. So if AI is going to replace an increasing number of professions, we must provide families the resources to sustain themselves in this brave new world. While our overall social process is encouraging, we must think about the reasons our divisions are getting more pronounced with each passing day. If we are to thrive and survive, we must be purposeful about how we prepare for tomorrow, ruled by the technology we are inventing today. So there you go. There's the clarion call. We're all just supposed to fix it, and everything's going to be hunky-dory fine. I don't think we have a very good track record for this. I just don't see that there's a whole lot of forward thinking. I know people are talky, but when the rubber gets right down to the road and these guys who have built these businesses are trying to make decisions that, shall we just give people money? You know, I mean, and so then you have, let's say the United States then votes to start taxing corporations 80% so they can just give people money or something like that. Well, guess what? These businesses go, you know what? They move their headquarters. They go someplace else. Maybe Bangladesh. Because everything's connected, it doesn't really matter where they put up their headquarters. Because in the future, we may not just be outsourcing jobs. We may be outsourcing whole companies. And when that happens, be a whole lot less jobs. So I don't really see that this whole utopia is coming. And in fact, I mentioned that I have a buddy who's building a doomsday bunker. And I ask him, I think I mentioned this on a podcast, I ask him, so what years are we talking about here? What did he call that? Something dynamics? Something social dynamics? I don't know. I forget what he called it. You know, he said, well, basically all the models show everything falling apart around 2050. You know, that's probably going to be pretty close. I don't think I'm going to have to worry about 2050 unless we make some of the advances in aging that they're possibly talking about. But I think fundamentally there's something else going on here. Technology certainly is driving all these things. But why is it that when we have this marvelous thing called the internet, it's marvelous the way it connects people and allows us to communicate with each other and exchange ideas and share our lives. Why? Do so many times we get reduced to banalities and complaining and offense and grousing, griping? Why do we so often see the conversations online turn to what I sometimes euphemistically call popsies, persons of poor cheer? Why do we just end up with that poor cheer? Not good cheer, but poor cheer, where how dare someone like Ellen Photoshop herself onto the back of Usain Bolt making a joke about, well, maybe he'll just carry me wherever I go and I'll get there faster. It's a joke, people. And everybody just comes apart. It's racist. Rawr! Okay, what is going on? And I think one possibility of what all is going on there is an understanding. If we understand that the big battles that we face in this life really come down to three things, and it was the temptations that Jesus faced. It's the temptation of comfort, it's the temptation of control, it's the temptation of convenience. Those are those things. I was having dinner with a buddy this week, and we got down to that, and he said, well, everybody wants that. And I said, well, that's the big temptation in our lives. And really, the true gospel of Jesus Christ calls us to be ready to give those things up, to give up our control, give up our comfort, give up our convenience, and still live for Him. But see, technology, what technology does is it tries to improve all those things for us, to make us bigger, faster, stronger, to make us know more, to make us feel like we're everywhere, that we are gods. And while it doesn't have to, I think the flesh is very good about using that to convince us that we deserve comfort and we deserve convenience and we deserve control. And then if anything in the world is not as we wish it to be, everybody comes apart because we're angry and we're merciless and we're graceless. So, yeah, I agree with everything the guy said in the article about how technology is setting us up for this new world and it's causing tensions and it's causing... But I think on top of all that, too, we have a situation where we have a flesh within us that is more than willing to do everything it can to take our technology and use it as a weapon against us. And as I said, I don't think it has to be a weapon against us. We can celebrate our technology and be grateful for it. And, you know, when we can't get connected to the internet or when our computer crashes, and I think... that then can show us what we use our technology for. I mean, when our computer crashes, we're like, oh, I can't believe it, right, you know, or is it like, oops, well, okay, let's try to reboot and see where we are. Do we stay pleasant when the technology is not working as we think it should? That's the question. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.